by any means necessary.
And we're going to keep the movement moving on, as they say. And we are very happy to be joined by Greg Ehlich, Korean Policy Institute board member and a contributor to the collection Sanctions as War, Anti-Imperialist Perspectives on American Geoeconomic Strategy. Greg, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me. Nice to be back on.
Absolutely. And Greg, Kim Jong-un, the leader of the DPRK, or North Korea, recently held a summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Eastern Russia, which is, I think, noteworthy on a for a couple of reasons. Of course, Kim Jong-un, not one to travel a lot. And of course, both countries sort of in need, I think, in different ways. And so I was hoping you could help us understand just what was the substance of this summit from what we understand. And why is the relationship between Pyongyang and Moscow something to understand as we're in this period of geopolitical shift?
Okay. Of course, if you follow the Western media, you won't find any enlightenment there because they're fixated on the subject of North Korea providing munitions to Russia. However, North Korea's already vowed that they're not going to supply munitions to Russia. And apparently, recent reports indicate that Russia is producing 2 million artillery shells per year, which is far more than the United States had expected. So they're actually not hurting at all in that regard. But if you look at Korean and Russia, North Korean and Russian media, you kind of get a different picture of what this was all about. And for both parties, economic interests were paramount. So they discussed. So the first stop was at Kasan, where Kim Jong-un met with Oleg Kozyemyako, who's the governor of the Russian region that borders on North Korea. And they discussed joint projects in tourism, agriculture, and construction. And they're going to have working groups that continue working on economic matters between Russia and North Korea. As far as meeting with Vladimir Putin, they said they were discussed quite a few projects of interest, including railway and expansion of railroads connecting the two countries. And they want to reopen the seaport. So what is that all about? So back in 2008, Russia started the Kazan-Rajin project with North Korea. Kazan is a town in Russia bordering North Korea, and Rajin is a port in the northern part of North Korea. And that was supposed to be a regional logistics hub that would link Chinese and provinces nearby and Russian provinces and North Korea. And there would be an expansion of railway connections and an expansion of the port. This would allow a great expansion of cargo capability going from the Pacific into Russia. And there was actually at one time also talk of South Korea being part of this project, and they'd be able to ship merchandise and so forth to through North Korea by rail, which would be a lot cheaper than sending it by ship. Of course, the UN resolutions killed that project altogether, but neither North Korea nor Russia have given up on that. And so they're actually talking about restarting that project. In fact, just 2 months ago, there was an intergovernmental meeting between the Russian Ministry of Natural Resources and Environment with their counterparts in North Korea. And they proposed broadening that range of cargo that the Rajin port could handle. So these talks have already been going on even before the Kim Jong-un's visit to Russia. Of course, the fly in the ointment is the UN sanctions. So there's one of the UN sanctions bans all joint venture projects of any kind with North Korea. So that would be a violation of the UN sanctions. Now, Vladimir Putin says that, they can expand cooperation with North Korea while at the same time respecting UN sanctions. I actually don't see how that's possible. So that could be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, Greg, and I do wonder what you think about the timing of this meeting has to do with the war in Ukraine and the emergence of this of BRICS and the apparent multipolarity that is emerging with countries around the world making economic and trade deals with both Russia and China. Do you see all of that impacting this meeting with between Russia and North Korea as just a part of this shift away from a Western-centric control of the world where countries are now just really not afraid of bucking the West anymore?
Yeah, and of course, actually, that relates to the second part of Sean's question that I forgot to answer. But yeah, that really is a big part of this, that Russia and North Korea and China, as well as a number of other countries, are basically under the gun from the United States, you know, sanctions and economic domination and attempts to cripple other nations' economies so they can't compete on an even playing field. There are a lot of countries that are getting fed up with this approach of the United States and not being allowed to develop their own economies as a sovereign nations. So I think the banding together, is that's what this is all about, is a way of trying to fight back against that. And interestingly enough, today, Vladimir Putin met with Alexander Lukashenko, the president of Belarus. And Lukashenko told Putin that he said, we could think about three-way cooperation with North Korea. So he's ready to sign on to cooperating with North Korea, too. So this could be like the start of an expansion of other countries trying to bypass sanctions and engage in normal relations with North Korea. And, of course, there's a military option. The U.S. is expanding its military presence in the Asia Pacific and conducting essentially nonstop military exercises that are aimed at practicing the invasion of North Korea and attack on China. So there's also that military component. And I think banding together is a way of also for these countries who are targeted to try and push back and say that, you know, we're not going to be just victims if you try and attack us.
Yeah. And, you know, Greg, I was actually tickled when I was reading some of the coverage about this summit from the Western media that you sort of alluded to earlier. And in the New York Times, the headline for their article on this is Putin and Kim find common ground in hostility toward the West. And so, I mean, reading that, I mean, you would think that the two of them were just like huddled in a room, just kind of giggling about how much they hate America. But I mean, in reality, we're talking about two countries who have very much been under attack from the West. And I sort of see this summit as just one of many developments as much of the world, honestly, I think especially in the global South, is putting a lot of energy and resources into what we could call counter-hegemonic efforts. I mean, not necessarily anti-imperialist in that sense, but just the fact that the U.S., through warfare and through the hegemony of the dollar and sanctions and so many other things, has just been running roughshod over much of the earth for so long. And now it seems that on different levels, there are seeds being planted to try to overcome that. And so it seems that a lot of this, I'm not sure what you would call it, this kind of sky is falling type of tone that the U.S. takes to a meeting like these, I think sort of evidences a kind of fear on the part of an empire that is very aware of its own decline. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, there was an interesting article or actually an op-ed in the Serbian press earlier this week. And this analyst suggested that all this talk of danger in the Western media and by Western officials, yeah, there is a danger. The danger is a change in the balance of forces. And that is what is panicking the United States. Like they might not be able to get their way all the time. There's pushback and there's resistance. And it's high time that people, that nations are fighting back. And this is the danger, you know. not that anybody's going to attack the United States or other its allies, but that nations are defending themselves more effectively by banding together. That's the danger.
Yeah, definitely. And there have been reports that China and Russia will lift some type of sanctions against North Korea. And I'm not sure that we're clear on what that means. So I'm wondering if you could give us some insight into what kind of measures that Russia and maybe China had imposed on North Korea that they're going to lift that will impact and improve relations between all three countries now.
You know, that's an interesting question, and I may have more questions than answers about that. But the UN sanctions are international, and all nations are apparently obligated to follow them. But they leave no leeway for economic aid. In fact, even to supply food and medicine, which are two other things that Kim Jong-un was looking for in this meeting with Russia. You can't do that even. So humanitarian groups operating in North Korea have had to shut down because you need to have your finances in a bank. You can't do that because that violates the sanctions. Any kind of economic trade, you can't do that because if it involves finances. Shipping medical equipment, there's a ban on shipping anything containing metal, no matter how small an amount. So you can't even ship medical equipment to North Korea. So I don't understand exactly how China or Russia can expand trade that would or get around these sanctions officially. I'm thinking maybe that there are things that will be done unofficially and not exactly advertised, let us say. Yeah, what can they do openly? There's very little. So this is exactly what I'm wondering, how this is going to play out, because there's a contradiction at the base here. And I noticed, too, that the United States has already fired a shot across the bow with Russia. So just today, they've sanctioned more than 150 Russian individuals and businesses. And I noticed also that in the House of Representatives, Jerry Connolly and Joe Wilson have submitted a bill to expand sanctions against North Korea for any engagement that it has with Russia.
Wow.
So the mechanics of how this is going to play out, I honestly don't know, but I'm extremely interested to see how that works out.
Yeah, and another thing in our last couple of minutes here, Greg, that I can't help but notice is how, you know, when we talk about Vladimir Putin and Kim Jong-un as leaders, I mean, these are two people, and just two of many, who suffer almost incessant demonization here in the U.S. and the West, you know, similar to what you see with just about any country that the U.S. has targeted. And what's interesting is that, you know, the Washington's disdain for them is always wrapped in this thing of, you know, them being like dictators and just like these evil, almost like cartoon villain sort of people who can't possibly have any other motivations. And there's an obvious utility of that in confusing the public about just what the U.S. is after. But it seems that and I think it shows sort of the use, the utility of propaganda, especially in a time like this with all of these contradictions happening and more imperialism is finding itself having to justify its existence. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, this is an old technique that you demonize a nation's leader and you personify an entire nation by one individual. So you can do any kind of military action or sanctions or any kind of damage you want to the country. And a large part of the domestic population will accept it because they just view an entire nation through the lens of one individual who's been personified as uniquely evil. Of course, in the case of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, it's kind of interesting to consider the hypocrisy of the United States condemning Russia for invading the Ukraine as something unique, a unique violation in the post-World War II order after given all the U.S. invasions and bombings and regime change operations the U.S. has conducted in the same period. But, you know, again, that's not how things are portrayed. This is a unique event. It's by a uniquely evil person. Same with North Korea, a uniquely evil person. And that justifies any damage that you want to inflict on their nations and the entire populations.
Definitely. Well, we thank you so much, Greg, for joining us today. We're going to leave it there. We're moving to a break here on By Any Means Necessary on Radio Sputnik in Washington, D.C. We'll be right back.